Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Dr. William Bengston, who is the author of The Energy Cure, Unraveling the Mystery of Hands-On Healing. This is a remarkable book with a great deal of scientific research into the phenomena of hands-on healing. And as I spent all weekend writing a lecture on frequency medicine, including how this works scientifically, I look forward to this interview. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Bengston.
Thank you.
So I understand you are a professor of sociology?
Yes, at St. Joseph's College in New York.
And you want to tell the listening audience a little bit how you discovered you were a hands-on healer?
Well, I actually don't even consider myself to be a hands-on healer. I do lab work, and I, by default, have put myself in the position of a skeptical healer, but I don't walk around with thinking of myself. You know, my business card doesn't say healer. I started out by watching clinical cases of healing, and as a skeptic, and I ran into a guy who was developing his ability, had no teacher, and he quite rudely fixed my bad back. That can get your attention. If you have a chronic bad back and you walk around in pain all the time and somebody comes along and puts their hands on your back and the pain goes away, you got a couple of options. One, you can walk away and say that was interesting. Two, you can become obsessed with it. And I guess I opted for the latter, and I became somewhat obsessed with trying to figure out what was going on. So what I did is I began watching him do healings, and I watched hundreds and hundreds of them. And there were some interesting patterns which I observed. Some things responded very quickly. Some things responded not at all. Some things responded quite slowly, and this became really interesting to me. And what I decided to do is take these observations and bring it into the lab and try it under controlled conditions. So that's basically how I got into it.
Are you aware of anybody else who has done similar experiments?
Well, there are many, many, many experiments on healing. And there are, at this point, journals devoted, not necessarily exclusively, but largely to healing studies of all sorts of healing schools, I guess you'd call them. And so I didn't follow them per se. I had been aware a long time ago, before I ran into this guy, I had been aware of some studies, some of the pioneering studies, particularly by Bernard Grad at McGill University.
Mm-hmm.
And way, way back in the 1950s and 60s, Grad, as a traditional oncology researcher at McGill in Montreal, did studies on the healer, in particular, Oscar Estabani.
Mm-hmm.
And Estabani was shown under controlled conditions to accelerate plant growth, to help sustain barley seeds that had been shocked, had accelerated wound healing and a variety of other things. So I was aware of that. And the Grad stuff impressed me very much because it was, at least in my case, the first time I'd ever seen control studies.
Was he the one that did the radiated seed study?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was a very impressive study. That was in vibrational medicine.
Yeah, Grad, again, was a he just died last December. He was a traditional researcher, had, I think, 300 papers in traditional oncology by the time he went into healing stuff, and he was, I think, in a very serious way, the pioneer of really controlled studies and getting it out into the literature. And as a pioneer, he took it on the chin. So he had a whole lot of rejection and took it on the chin at McGill University. But he got the stuff out there, and he got some of the stuff out. So he was the guy who caught my attention. And really, I guess, inspired me that this kind of really systematic stuff was possible to do.
Yeah, and those early studies also took out the placebo effect issue in the study of healing. And that's always been a big question mark, how much of this is placebo. Because certainly the mind-body connection in a lot of human diseases is there, but
I would imagine in the business of mice, like you had, and plants and radiated seeds, there is no placebo effect.
Well, actually, I do get a placebo effect, which is pretty interesting. Placebo is sometimes thought, I guess most predominantly thought of as some sort of a psychological factor. Mm-hmm. And I think the implication in most people's minds is if you can trick the mind somehow, it has a tremendous, there's a tremendous mind-body connection. But I get placebo effects in mice. And I'm actually doing some studies now in vitro with leukemia cells. And I'm not sure yet, but I'm it seems likely that I'm also getting a placebo linkage to control groups that are just cells in petri dishes. And so I think that I actually did a paper of this in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine in 2008 with Margaret Moga of Indiana University Med School. And what I suggested was that placebo effects may not be entirely psychological. In fact, they may be a linkage between experimental and control groups. And what may happen, in fact, is that if you're in an experiment, there is an effect of that experiment regardless of which group you're in. And it would be very interesting to me to see if there are placebo effects without a larger experiment going on. I suspect there would not.
Well,
there may in fact be some sort of a resonant bond between all participants in an experiment. So what happened to me is I work with mice which had 100% fatality, and I mean literally 100% fatality. Mm-hmm. And not only would my experimental mice get cured, but if anyone came into contact with the control group, the control groups got cured also. And this was very disturbing to me. In fact, it became very difficult in our experiments to get them to die.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, your control mice that were on site in the lab had more of this happen than the ones that were off site. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. If the mice were shipped off site, then we didn't have this, I mean, it depends what you want to call it. You can call it a resonant bonding and a cure. I actually would prefer to call it a placebo effect. And so, the interesting thing, maybe in most people's minds I'm misusing the word placebo, but I'm getting a placebo effect when the healer isn't a believer and the healee isn't a believer. Yet we're getting
right.
a placebo response in mice and perhaps in single cells.
Yeah. Well, you know, this paper I did this weekend on frequency medicine, there is actually an explanation of what might be going on with that. Have you looked into the physics of scalar waves?
No. No.
Probably what I should do is send you a copy of the paper, and then we need to discuss it, you know, before our next interview, because we're going to have another interview. But there's actually a physics explanation if you understand the physics of scalar waves. And
I do a little bit. I actually just published a paper that came out last December, so like 5 months ago. It came out in the Journal of Scientific Exploration, where I show a linkage between two brains at a distance. And so what we have is really calibrated high-end EEGs, and they're synchronized, and we're sampling from two brains every 500th of a second. So we have this monstrous database. And what happens is when you go into healing mode, whatever that might mean, the person who's separated at some distance, you know, they're not in the same room kind of a thing, the brains go into a resonant frequency.
Mm-hmm.
I also indicate in that, not scalar waves, but a possible mechanism for how this might occur. So it's pretty interesting. It's done with Luke Hendricks and Jay Gunkelman, and we did this in a pretty sophisticated EEG lab. We've
Let
got some more data, but the database is so big it's hard to get to.
Did you ever put your control mice in a Faraday cage?
No. My prediction would be, though, based on what I think I know now, and I'm probably wrong, but what I think I know now, Faraday cage wouldn't block it because the mechanism by which the stuff is transferred
is not blocked by Faraday cages.
It's not going to be blocked by a Faraday cage. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how
do you block a scalar wave?
Pardon?
The question becomes, how do you block a scalar wave?
Yeah, it becomes a little bit of a problem.
It does.
I mean, all of this
time
stuff.
Time and space do not block it.
This stuff, I mean, we may be thinking of it in the wrong terms. Blocking it implies kind of going from point A to point B. And this is also implied in the idea of the phrase that's often used, energy medicine.
Right.
And I suspect, and again, I'm speculating here, but I suspect it's not an energy, which is kind of ironic because, as you point out, my book's called The Energy
Right.
Cure. You know, so I'm already contradicting myself, and you know, you can't sweat the small stuff, right?
Right.
So I don't know that there's energy, because if it is energy, then we're putting it in traditional physical terms, and if we put it in traditional physical terms, what should happen is the effect should diminish, and it doesn't diminish.
But it's not traditional energy.
I'm sorry?
It's not traditional energy, but do you know how you control a scalar wave? You do it through intent. So the question is, was there a different intent, say, when the healer was doing the healing and was able inadvertently to cure the control mice as well as their own mice, or was there a different intent when the control mice weren't cured, you see? I believe, and this is just from the research I was doing this weekend, I believe that it would be in the intent. And it could be an unconscious intent. Like, you talked in your book about how bonded you got with these mice and many of the people, the students that you had doing the healing would bond with the mice because, you know, they're other living creatures. And them just knowing that there was a control group, that energy could go to the control group as well. But if the healer didn't know there was a control group at all, you never told them there was a control group, you might get a different result.
Well, I actually have some unpublished experiments on that. I haven't published everything I have.
There you go. Fine.
What we had in one experiment that is yet to be published is there was a second control group that I didn't know existed.
Uh-huh.
They got cured.
Really?
Yep.
You doing the healing?
In this particular experiment, I was doing the healing. And so what we had is a bunch of this was done in a medical school, and the medical school set up a particular protocol, and it essentially, here's what happened. The experimental mice, the mice that were being treated, you know, cage after cage after cage, and there was a whole bunch of them. In one experiment, we had 75 of them, you know, that kind of thing. And so mice were being treated in cage after cage. And the control mice that I thought existed were at least 100 meters away.
Yeah.
And in between them and me was a whole bunch of other cages of identical mice being used in other experiments.
Right.
They didn't get affected at all.
Really?
Which is pretty interesting. Yeah, Sheldrake's hypothesis doesn't work in this case.
No.
If I've spoken to him about this. If he's right, I mean, he may be right as a separate issue, but if his model would predict that like mice would, if it came within the field, would be affected.
Yeah.
None of them were affected. So we had at least a dozen labs of the exact same mice going on. None were affected. The control mice were cured, and so the healing effect skipped mice that weren't as part of the experiment. And then the kicker was that we had another cage. I didn't know this until the whole thing was over. And then a couple of grad students said, you know, by the way, we had another control cage. And I said, really? Where was it? And they said, well, it was in a different place. And I said, what happened? They got cured.
Really?
Isn't that interesting?
Well, you've got to figure this out.
Well, how hard could that be? You know, give me 2 or 3 minutes.
Well, let's back up a little bit for the listeners. Why don't you tell them a little bit about the usual standard protocol you have for these experiments, and how it's not just you doing the healing. You trained other people to do it, and what the healing was about.
Well, the general idea was to try to do very, very controlled studies. So we used, first of all, a mouse model. We've used a couple of them, but they're standard off-the-shelf mouse models. So in one that I've done 8 experiments so far in, it's a mammary cancer, and it's probably the most common mouse cancer that there is. There have been literally thousands of published studies about these mice. And so all of them die within 27 days if you give them a certain dose. We actually gave them double the lethal dosage.
Right.
And we sometimes double injected with double the lethal dosage. I mean, we did everything we could to kill these suckers.
Sure.
We couldn't do it. But in any event, what you normally do is you take a bunch of mice who have been injected, and you split them up randomly into a treated group and an untreated group.
Mm-hmm.
You treat the treated group, and by treating the treated group, I mean that some healer would put their hands around a cage and do some healing technique, and the untreated group would just be left alone. Or, in some experiments, the untreated group would be treated by people who were not trained in the healing technique.
Right.
So we've had all sorts of conditions trying to do this. And the mice, I mean, you know what's supposed to happen. 100% of them are supposed to die within a month.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens instead is they go through this process of remission whereby the cancer grows. And so any, I guess, analogy to something like zapping them doesn't work here.
Right.
If you think of healing as something akin to radiation, it's the wrong way to think about this, because it doesn't take cancer and kill it. The cancer goes through its own lifestyle, its own lifespan. It goes through its own life cycle, and it grows, to my dismay. Then it ulcerates, and then it implodes.
Right.
And then the mice are cured and live their normal lifespan and are further immune to any further injections.
Right.
So you can't give it to them again.
That's
so I've done this as the healer, and I've also trained students and faculty, all of whom are skeptical. And,
right.
and that's generally an understatement. Most of the time people, not only are they skeptical, they think I'm out of my mind. And even if I assure them that's a separate issue, some have actually thought and noted in their experiment logs that they thought I was doing a study in gullibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so it gives you an idea how much they actually believed or had experience in this kind of stuff. So I've only worked with skeptical people, non-believing people. I've never worked with someone who believed that it would happen. And it's an interesting question to see if belief helps at all. I suspect that it hurts, but you know, I don't really know that. So that's just a speculative statement. I think that all other things being equal, belief in this stuff is a detriment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get the non-believers. I teach them my healing techniques. They put their hands around, feeling like damn fools, and we get the same results.
So in terms of the average result, would you say you get close to 100%, 90 to 100% cure rate in the treated group?
The only failures we've ever had were by biologists and physicians.
Really?
Yeah, so, I mean, I know your day job, so I don't want to say that if you're sick, you should keep away from people who have been to medical school or biology, but
yeah.
Those are my only failures.
Do you think it might be because they have such a strong belief system it won't work?
No, I actually think it's because when they're dealing with animals in a lab, and I'm speculating here too, they go into a they put on their biologist hat.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just healing.
Okay.
They start thinking and trying. And they try to will it to happen. And I think healing is anything but willing something to happen. So, I'm speculating on this too. In one experiment I did, we had some biology students who also thought this was crazy, and we had them do mice in the lab and mice at home. And the mice they did at home, they cured. The mice they did in the lab with their little white coats on died. So I would say never put on a white coat if you're going to try to heal.
Right. I don't wear a white coat. I wear a flowered jacket.
Then you're fine. Maybe cancer likes white. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. So what are your future plans in terms of these experiments?
Well, I have a number of things I'd like to accomplish. The basic scientific question is, what's going on? And so I'd like to know the underlying mechanism behind all this. So how does it work, what happens, and such? And I suspect, again, I'm speculating, that there is something immunological that is being stimulated. The observation is that once the mice are cured, they're cured for life. They're immune, I'm hoping I'm using that term correctly. It may not actually be an immune function, but they appear to be immune to future injections. What we haven't tried is to see if they're immune to other cancers, which would completely ruin my immunological
model. I would think they're not.
Well, that's what we got to test.
Yeah, that would be a good thing to test. And let me tell you why I think that. What I see happening, and it's hard to, you know, really prove this because of perspective, but what I see happening is I believe that you created a template for this particular, and I think it was you that did it, because I read the story in here about, I read your story in the Energy Cure, and I think you created a template that exists somewhere in the universal mind, and the template is a very strong one, and it has to do with probably this mammary cancer and mice. And you taught people to tap into that template through the method that you were guided to do, which is, you know, you're very scientific, so it's very standardized. And those people who are able to tap into that, the energy very quickly goes in and cures the mice and even cures the control mice, because you've been doing this for many, many years, and this template is stronger and stronger and stronger. But what I would say is that you probably don't have the same template for, say, leukemia or something like that, but it would be really good to test it, because you might be able to create the template in what we call the, you know, the higher realms to cure all kinds of cancer with mice. You just have to intend to do that at a point at which you can establish that, you know, I guess it would be Sheldrake's morphogenic field, but it would be one that would be either specific or more general. I mean, can you tell me whether or not when you set all of this up, if you felt it was specific to this cancer, or was it just more generalized cure cancer?
It was none of those. I wouldn't know how to cure cancer.
No,
I wouldn't know what to do. I wouldn't know what the first step was.
No, I know you know, but the intent. What was the...
Oh, the intent was specific to
the
experiment. So we had our mice, and I guess our intent was to have a successful experiment. I would say that would be the overriding intent, was just simply the success of the experiment itself.
Well, if that was the intent, you might cure other cancers.
I'm sorry?
If that was the intent, then you might cure other cancers, too, with the same method.
Well, we've done others, too. So what we have done is we've done sarcomas, for example, but what we haven't done is tried to take a mouse cured of a sarcoma and inject it with a mammary.
Right, yeah. Well,
so
that would be a good experiment.
That has yet to be done, and that, I think, is a very important thing to do. So we've done a couple of experiments with sarcomas in mice.
Mm-hmm.
Sarcomas in mice tend to be less aggressive than mammary cancer, and that leads to one of the things I think we've discovered, and that is the more aggressive a cancer is, the easier it is to fix.
It has a division rate that's quicker.
Yeah, and it also then has a cure rate.
Yeah.
So if it comes in very strong, it leaves very strong. If it comes in fast, it leaves fast. If something goes taking little baby steps, then the sarcoma mice have a life expectancy of about twice that of the mammary.
Mm-hmm.
And they take about twice as long to cure. So
right.
I don't think you're healing anything, frankly. What I think is happening is not energy at all. I mean, we've tested this short and far away. We've looked at geomagnetic fluxes in the room when you're doing this stuff, and it turns out you get the same kind of space signature in the room at 2 inches as you do from 2,000 miles. Nothing changes at all. And so there's no diminishment of, I guess you'd call it a signal. And it also appears, the signal appears in the experimental and control room simultaneously, which is really interesting. And it even appears in the rooms that I didn't know existed.
Well,
so it's certainly
that would
not intent that's specific to a group of mice.
Right.
So we had one experiment where six rooms
really
were going on.
Room.
I didn't know about it. They all got cured.
Yes.
It's pretty interesting.
Well, it's certainly a fascinating effect, and what I would suggest is as soon as possible, you need to establish the same template for women who have breast cancer. You know, you need to move it along.
Yeah, one of the problems with doing this, because remember we started clinically, and the problem was people were getting cured and we didn't know why.
Right.
And so you work in a clinical realm. I don't know how to do that. Meaning, let's say someone comes in and has condition X, and
mm-hmm.
you do healing, and it goes away. Well, you know, I've seen that hundreds and hundreds of times. I don't know why it happened. So let's say someone comes in with X, and then you test them out sometime in the future, and they don't have X anymore. Well, I don't know whether it was the healing, whether it was the grapefruit, whether it was they exercised, they stopped exercising, they ate bran, they didn't eat bran. I don't know what did it, including time.
True, but if you have a group of patients you do healing on and a group of patients you don't do healing on, and the group of patients, say a stage 4 breast cancer, okay?
Right.
Stage 4 breast cancer is going to have a certain mortality rate, and the mortality
right.
rate is a statistically significant difference, then you can assume it was the healing.
Well, there won't be a difference, and that I can virtually guarantee at this point. Everybody who comes to the experiment will be cured, whether they're treated or not. They're gonna behave just like the mice, and then you're going to conclude that nothing happened.
And that's why you need to do it as soon as possible.
Yeah, but then all you're going to have is a conclusion that nothing happened. Here's what happened in one experiment we did. This is also not published. This was also at a medical school, and we had 6 rooms of mice going on,
mm-hmm.
and all the mice had this mammary cancer with 100% death. And I didn't even know about some of the rooms. I knew about 3 of the rooms. I didn't know that there were 3 others. And there were various things going on. Sometimes there was a sham healer. Sometimes there was no healing. Sometimes. And the mice have 100% death. And all the mice in all 6 rooms got cured. Now,
that's because
the medical school sent the data out for analysis by an independent statistician.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm a statistician. You know, I got no problem with independent
right.
person checking this. But what they did is what's called a one-way ANOVA, and it came back non-significant because there was no difference among the 6 rooms. And therefore, they concluded nothing happened.
Well, you know what? I think there's a conspiracy here.
But you see the mindset?
Yeah.
So let's say you do an experiment and you've got, I don't know, let's say 20 women with stage 4 breast cancer, and you treat 10 and all 20 get cured, the conclusion would be you were not successful.
Well, no, because people not in your study, either as control or treated group, have 100%, well, you know, a 95% mortality rate within 5 years.
Well, the mice have 100% death. a month.
So you went through
something.
People
still look at this and shake their head and go,
nothing
happened. There was no difference.
I'm sorry?
They look at this and they say, what was the difference between your treated and untreated mice? Grad asked me that question. This is Grad, the guy who started all this stuff. And I said to him, it's not the right question to ask because you know what should happen. The controls are supposed to function as what otherwise would have happened. We know what would have happened. There's several thousand studies on this.
Right.
Yet all of them get cured. And so there's no real difference between the experimental and control groups. And therefore, you'd say nothing happened. Everybody got cured.
Well,
see, it's a problem.
I think we need to determine exactly what the treatment exists. I mean, what the treatment is, what sort of energy it is. It is obviously not necessarily within the electromagnetic spectrum, but it might still be energy nonetheless. And or it could be energy and information in a certain form. But in any case, there must be a way to have the control group and the treatment group get separated. But you just, I think what this is pushing you toward is understanding the what is really going on behind this.
Oh, I agree. But notice what you said if we apply that clinically. You're trying to figure out how to get the patients to die.
No, you're trying to run a regular experiment like all the chemotherapy experiments where you have a control and a regular group.
Yeah, but the controls are going to get better too.
And maybe that's how it should be.
Well, yeah, but saying is it's hard. It's hard. Clinical stuff is tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. Because you don't know, it's hard to isolate factors.
Now, what was your time of treatment for these particular mice with this particular mammary tumor?
How often do we treat?
Yeah, and for how long?
Well, we vary this by experiment. So we've done, in the initial experiments, we tried to treat 1 hour a day.
Okay.
In subsequent experiments, looking for a dose response, we've tried treating less.
Mm-hmm.
So I've tried 1 hour a day. I've tried once a week, three times a week, five times a week. I've tried to just treat water and give just the water to the mice.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried 45-minute treatments. I've tried half-hour treatments. I've tried treating 10 mice at a time, five mice at a time.
Mm-hmm.
None of these parameters matter at all.
And so you don't really have the shortest dose response time analyzed yet?
No. Because of the resonant bonding, it's a very, very, very difficult problem. In one experiment I did where I treated some mice once a week, some three times a week, some five times a week, and then some with water, I figured, well, that should do something. But all the mice got cured, and that was before I really understood that when you're treating one mouse in an experiment, you're treating all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm just treating the experimental mice, and I think I'm treating this one cage once a week, but I'm actually treating whenever I treat all the mice, even the mice I don't know about.
Well, that would indicate that whatever information is coming in from something other than a third-dimensional source.
Well, it's certainly coming in from a way that's confusing.
It's hard for most of us to even imagine what's beyond three dimensions, you know.
Yes, it is.
We're born into this world, and until we die, we probably don't really appreciate that this is not all that is, you know. In general,
yeah, well, I mean, I can do math in the hyperdimensions. I just don't know what the hell it means, you know. It looks
right.
Cute in an equation.
Exactly. You can't. It's
but
not
what it really means,
everyday.
I don't know. You know, it's.
Yeah.
I'm manipulating symbols.
Yeah.
Somehow it works, though. That's the interesting thing. But I'm doing some stuff now in vitro also, which is not my favorite way to go.
Right.
Because I think, for example, if you took cancer and put it in a we'll just say a petri dish, you know, it could be whatever, but we'll call it a petri dish, and so it's not in a body, and you try to kill that cancer. You know, let's say you get a healer who tries to kill that cancer. Well, that's not a healing study. That's a
killing
study. It's a killing study.
Very different.
And so I made a prediction way back when that if you did cancer in a Petri dish, I mean, what should happen to the cancer is that it should thrive.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you're giving it healing.
Energy, right.
Well, we can still, you know, argue about that, but we're giving it healing.
Mm-hmm.
We're intending to treat. If you're, there's a wonderful phrase in that book that came out about a year ago, The Emperor of All Maladies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a biography of cancer. And I'm blanking out on the guy's name. He's a physician in New York. But he describes cancer as a more perfect version of ourselves. The thing can reproduce to beat the band.
Yeah, it can.
And so you stick it in a Petri dish and you heal it, what should happen? It should thrive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have preliminary data that indicates that might be right. What I need to do soon is to find out where in the hierarchy of organisms that the cancer, I don't think the cancer is ever killed. I think the cancer is welcomed back into the organism.
Right.
That what's happening with cancer is it doesn't communicate with its neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have an off switch.
Right.
So you siphon some blood out of me, and my body will reproduce the amount of blood that you siphoned out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it stops.
Right.
That's interesting. I won't ask you how that happens because nobody knows.
Right.
So it goes back, and it knows when to stop. Cancer doesn't know when to stop. And in that sense, I think it's lost its communication capacity with other cells.
There's an interesting body of work that's not published that says that if you can change via electromagnetics the nucleus of the cancer cell into I believe it's a negative charge. I have to look this up. I wrote this paper this weekend. But if you can make the nucleus negative again, that the cancer that is internal to the body will turn into normal cancer, and if it's external tumor, it will ulcerate and then heal over. So, you know, I was reading your work right as I was writing this paper, and I wanted to communicate that to you because maybe
that's
the healing is changing the polarity in the nucleus of the cancer cell.
Yeah, I mean that's really fascinating stuff, and so yeah, I would very much appreciate a copy of that.
There is, well, it's in my paper, but you must understand that this information came to me from a source that is not able to publish. Okay.
Oh, I don't
because
care.
Of, yeah, I mean it's not it's. I mean, I can tell you. Well, I'll just send you the paper. How's that?
I would love it. I very much appreciate
it.
That. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Sources of ideas is a complete mystery anyway.
Right. Right.
I mean, I came up with
something that has been proven many times before, not published because they won't allow it to be published. However, it is true in the laboratory and also true in humans. So, if that's what you're doing, that could be the mechanism. Changing the polarity within the nucleus.
It could be the way that, yeah, that something occurs. That would be wonderful.
So the question is, can we measure that? You know, is that able to be measured in the laboratory? So, but anyway, I'll get, like I said, the paper's still being proofed and everything. But
it's not a scientific paper.
Yep. This is a paper I'm writing for another, not a scientific, will not be published in a scientific journal.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of junk in scientific journals are junk. So that's not the issue.
Well,
the issue is what can I use, modify?
There's a lot of stuff you can't publish, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so, but...
It's not allowed.
Know, my resonant bonding idea came, I have no idea where it came from, but I sat up in a flash and manically paced around the house and started mumbling about this resonant bonding stuff, and
mm-hmm.
I've taken it into the lab to test it, and it turns out to be right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where it came from.
That's called inspiration, and it comes from a higher plane. It probably comes from the same plane that is outside of three dimensions that your, whatever you want to call it, you can call it a morphogenic field, you can call it, you know, a template. But in any case, it is the idea behind the 100th monkey concept that, you know, when things get established in the higher realms of the universal mind, then everybody can do it. The 4-minute mile, the monkeys washing the fruit, you know, there's lots of examples of it.
Yep.
But, you know, you had to establish this at the first. You were the first monkey.
Yep. Well, I mean, that too is pretty interesting. What I found, I mean, you need a whole bunch more experiments than I've done, but what I found is I can't say for sure that it's getting faster, easier, or anything like that. I don't know. I have sympathy for the 100th monkey hypothesis, but I can't say that it'd be easier to do in vitro than in vivo. It's a pain to do mice.
Yeah, well, if you're the first monkey, you won't see it, but I might see it. In other words, if I intend to tap into whatever you're tapping into, because you've done humans as well, then I go into my healing room with my cancer patients, I may have remarkable success.
I'm absolutely sympathetic to all of that. It's a difficult problem to solve, but it's one absolutely worth pursuing. As is the mechanistic, so you're alluding to change in polarity of the nucleus. Well, I mean, that's the question then becomes, is that a cause or an effect? So does a change in polarity happen as a consequence? It'd be like asking, you know, you could look at gene expression, and that's terrific, but you don't know what caused the gene expression. You know, so if you change the gene, you may or may not get the same result.
And there may not be one
because you may be inverting
thing.
Cause and effect.
Right. There may not be one thing, like the, you know, the magic bullet. It may not be one thing. It may be three things that occur that need to occur for this to happen. We don't know.
Yep. Worth pursuing. So the issue is, I mean, I think we're essentially walking down the same path here. The issue is to try to find the underlying mechanism, and I've got some experiments going on now, and to see if we can reproduce this and reproduce it without the people.
Yeah.
Can we take the people out of... Can something akin to a literal or metaphorical vaccine be the 100th monkey?
Right.
That'd
be a lot easier to administer.
Yeah, it would be a whole lot easier because people are a pain.
Right.
You know, they're annoying.
They can be.
Yeah, they are.
Well, we're coming up to the end of our hour. Dr. Benson, would you like to give some contact information? Do you have a website or anything you want to give to the
audience? Yeah, I have a website. It is bengstonresearch.com. That's BENGSTON, research, one word, .com. And I don't know, I got some stuff up there. I'm not sure what it is. My wife does it. so it'll talk about publications and papers and research and workshops and things like that.
Is it a CD that you have out, a CD set?
Yeah, there's a couple things that from Sounds True. The Energy Cure is a book. It's a memoir. And it's just kind of like, it's a memoir. So this is how I got to this point. The second thing that Sounds True asked me to do was to look at or to make a series of how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to their studio about a year ago and just kind of dictated 6 CDs. Nothing's read. It's just kind of like instruction as if you were taking part in my experiments.
So
if you were taking part in my experiments, how would I train you?
I'm going to be interviewing you on that. We have that set up for later.
Yeah, that's interesting. One of my questions is, and I've gotten into some trouble with people on this, is the question of whether healing can be taught. I did a paper with another biologist buddy a couple of years ago in Explore, the Journal of Science and Medicine, entitled Can Healing Be Taught? And I've actually had people screaming at me about that. They haven't read the paper, but they just call me the village idiot because, of course, it could be taught. You know, I taught. You know, you were taught. Everybody was taught.
Right.
And I say, yeah, but we don't know if the teaching made you better.
Right.
We don't
have
pre and post.
True. Maybe it made you worse.
Maybe it made you worse. Maybe everybody's really good at this stuff till they'd use my method.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? So let's find out.
That's right. You have to design an experiment to figure it out, but the problem is you got control and treated problems.
Yeah, it's a real tough problem. It's
really
a real tough problem.
Yeah. Well, it's been a great interview. Thank you so much for joining us today. We got a little late start because of some technical problems, but I've been interviewing Dr. William Bingston, the Energy Cure, Unraveling the Mystery of Hands-On Healing, and I'll be back interviewing him, I think in June or July, I'm not sure exactly, but fairly soon, on his CD set on actually how to do the hands-on healing. And next week, we will be interviewing Elizabeth Fayette on Paving It Forward, and then Chris Carter on the 28th Science and the Near-Death Experience. We have a Noetic Science meeting on the 19th of May at 7:30 at the Dunwoody office. We're going to be hearing about What in the World Are They Spraying, a DVD film on the chemtrails. And then on the 17th, Dr. Gould is giving a cellular rejuvenation and regeneration lecture at 7:30 in the evening. Dr. Bingston, thanks so much for joining us, and I look forward to our next conversation. And I'm going to try to find some answers to these questions because I believe in synchronicities, and these are the kind of things that I was studying this weekend when I was writing that paper. So these are great questions.
They're fun questions to ponder.
They are. Thank you so much for joining us, and please, everybody, join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.